What's happening, everyone? This is another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined as always by the insider, A'Sherrod Blakely. What's up, dude? You recovered fully from the All-Star break, partying in New Orleans, drinking Mai Tais or whatever they drink on Bourbon Street?
Both teams play hard. Both teams played hard. Right. And they played hard, Drapes.
They played hard
Played hard.
They played hard in Detroit, from my sources are telling me. Detroit was a good time.
Shout
too.
Out to my boy Ben Wallace.
Hey, we got a good show coming up here. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Celtics and where they stand in the Eastern Conference. We're going to talk also about, you know, the injury situation going on around the league. Kevin Durant's out for a while. Kyle Lowry, how does that impact the Celtics? What's going on with Al Horford and Jaylen Brown? We all have all that and more coming up in just a few minutes. We're also going to be joined by USA Today's NBA insider Sam Amick. He'll be stopping by to talk all things NBA and the Celtics as well. But first, Sherrod, let's get into the Celtics right now, coming off a good win against Cleveland. They haven't been playing great, however, since the All-Star break. 2-2 so far going into the five-game road trip here that the Celtics are on. How do you think they're playing right now?
Average. I mean, there's nothing special about what they're doing. What they're doing is they're finding ways to win games and just really, I think, shake off that All-Star hangover. I mean, it's hard to hit the ground. When you're playing as well as they were pre-All-Star break, then you've got that basically a week off where you're not doing the things that allowed you to get into that rhythm. It takes a little bit of time to kind of find your mojo again. But the thing about it, they give themselves a chance most nights to win. And to me, that's the beginning of being an elite team, finding a way to just position yourself for success. But that win over Cleveland was huge. Oh, my
goodness.
I mean,
huge.
That monkey is still there. That monkey is not that far,
right.
But he's not hanging over their back like he was before that win.
Well, you saw the notes. You know, their record against the elite teams in the Eastern Conference hasn't been good. You know, they've lost the season series to Toronto. Atlanta is up on the season series. Cleveland could have taken the season series with the win on Wednesday night. And so it was important to get a win against a good Eastern Conference team and the Eastern Conference favorites, I think.
It was. And you know, the players, they tried to not put too much stock into it. And I think part of that is because Cleveland, I don't think, really played with the sense of urgency that I think if you saw them in the playoffs, they would have.
They looked like
a really good team that says, you know what, we probably are going to win this game, but if we don't win this game, well, that's okay. We're good. And for the Celtics, I think their position was, we got to get this dub.
Yeah.
We got to get this one now because they're clearly not bringing it the way they're capable of doing it, and we have to at least come close to that to give ourselves a chance. And, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
I mean, to me,
he makes a big difference.
They don't win that game without Avery Bradley. In fact, I think they get the doors blown off them if they don't have him, because Kyrie got anything and everything he wanted until AB got on him. I mean, he was 9-for-15 shooting before Avery Bradley came in the fourth quarter. He missed three of his last four shots, primarily with Avery Bradley on him.
No, and Brad, I thought, strategically left Avery Bradley out.
I love Ty Lue. That's my dude. But Brad got that dub in terms of the coaching matchup.
Right, I mean,
he and Ty Lue has done a really, really good job for the most part. But Brad got him last night.
Yeah, I mean, but Ty Lue can't do anything about that, though. I mean, it's not like he could say, oh, you know what, I'm going to save Kyrie Irving for the final 2 minutes also. I mean, you know, it's a good move by Brad. You know, Ty couldn't do anything about that, I don't think.
Well, but, man, I mean, they never adjusted to that. I mean, to me
– adjusted to what?
Listen, in that situation, Drapes, you've got Boston's best defender, Avery Bradley, guarding your elite guard.
It's Kyrie Irving.
There's another dude that Kyrie Irving plays with that's pretty good, too, by the name of LeBron James.
And LeBron did his thing.
LeBron was in, I want to make everyone around me happy. That pass that he made to Deron Williams, everyone's talking about, that was the right basketball play.
Oh, definitely.
He was wide open for a quick second.
He didn't take it. Pass got a better look from Deron Williams. I take that. If I'm LeBron, I take that shot 10 times out of 10.
If it were J.R. Smith – Instead of
Deron
Williams.
Everybody hating on Deron Williams.
I'm hating on Deron
Williams.
Don't
hate on Deron.
I'm hating
Deron Williams has had plenty of good games against the Celtics.
The key
Check
word,
the track
the key,
record.
The key, well, the key word in your statement was had. Not has or will have, but had.
A wide open three, man.
I'll give him that shot.
He was wide open.
I'll give him that shot.
Corner three, the easiest shot in the game? That shows me how much you don't know about basketball, big fella.
I know that when a guy hasn't played in a while, he's going to be a little bit of rusty. And if he's an older player, he's not going to be ready to make those shots.
But here's the thing, Shirai.
If we're having this conversation in 3 weeks.
Let's keep it real, Shirai.
If we're having this conversation in 3 weeks, I would not give him that shot. But at that moment, considering how new he was to the team, considering the condition that you know and I know that his body is.
So you'll give an NBA point guard an open three. You know Shirai from playing basketball.
You act like
Anybody can make one shot. Anybody can make one shot. And so you don't want a guy to get lucky, so you close out. You don't give anybody an open shot. You play better D. That was the right move, man. Deron Williams had a wide open corner three, the easiest three-point shot in the entire game, and he missed it. And you heard LeBron say it and T. Lou say it after the game, that chalk it up. Both teams played well. The Celtics played a little better. I mean, LeBron was asked, what do you take out of this one? Any negatives? And he's like, no negatives.
We competed. They competed.
They won. But I'm not going to get into a Deron Williams argument with you.
I find it comical.
Dude, you know
he's
me.
Not that good.
He isn't that good, but he was wide open, dude. He can make that shot. I mean,
so in other words, if John Rondo's in the corner with a wide open shot, you're going to give him that shot?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's Rondo, though. You're comparing Deron Williams' outside shot
I'm comparing
to Rajon.
Two aging
Rajon Rondo, historically awful three-point shooter. That's like saying, oh, yeah, you know, I'll give Hassan Whiteside this wide. You know, no, dude, Deron Williams can knock down that shot, bro. Come on, man. Let's get back to the Celtics, the team at hand, though. Before we get to Al Horford, before we get to Jaylen Brown, what's up with Isaiah Thomas? He doesn't look 100%.
He's hurt.
He scored 31. He looks worn out. He looks tired. He looks beat down. What are you seeing from
Look at
IT?
The minutes. Look at the body of work. And specifically, look at the body. He doesn't move the way he did two, three,
And are you
weeks
concerned
ago.
About that?
Yeah,
then.
I'm concerned okay. about Hell yeah, okay. I'm concerned about it. Because listen, this team is built in such a way where every single key component has to be at or close to their best when it comes playoff time. And I don't like the fact that we've got another 20-some-odd games and Isaiah is still playing mid to high 30s in terms of minutes. I wish there was a way that they could ease his minutes back a little bit, give his body a little bit of in-game rest, because Isaiah ain't taking no games off.
Right.
You're going to lose that battle. And Brad hasn't even approached that subject because he knows you can't win that with him. You got to find ways to get him some in-game rest to just get him off his feet. Because his body, major props to him for the season he's having. I mean, give it up to him. But the brother's human.
Yeah.
He's human. And the way he plays, to me, that invites injuries to some extent because he plays so hard.
But what happened, Shirai? Because before the All-Star break, he was pointing to the watch. He was smiling. But since he's been back, I haven't seen him smile one time out on the floor. I haven't seen the watch. I mean, it just seems like he's still getting his numbers. Actually, his numbers are down since the All-Star break, shooting percentage as well. But I don't see the Isaiah smiling. You know, it's like a labor out there. He's laboring
a little
bit. It's work, you know?
It's become work. Before, everything's hunky-dory. Right, I'm the little guy killing it. Everyone loves me. But now it's like, okay, you got to beat the big boys, young fella.
Yeah.
You've got to be more – you got to give more than what you've given, which is crazy when you think about it. That's why having Avery Bradley back is so huge because I think we're going to slowly but surely see Isaiah be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more comfortable, and hopefully get those minutes down a little bit because they're not off the charts high, but I would like to see him play a little bit less just so that he can be a little bit fresher for the playoffs.
Yeah, and Isaiah is the type of player that, I mean – you don't want any player to take possessions off. But because the way they use him and what they're asking, when he's on the floor, he's a huge part of everything they do, So there is, it's not like he can – I don't want to say coast, but, coast a couple of minutes here and there.
He can't because teams are going at him at the other end of the floor because they feel that in order to – play better defense against him, you got to make him play better defense. Right. And so he can't catch a break. He can't catch a break when he's on the floor. Where I think some other guys, I don't think guys are just banging out, in line all night. I don't think they're doing that to Amir. I don't think they're doing that to Jay. But Isaiah, he doesn't have any choice. He's got to bring it both ends of the floor.
And he maybe he needs some help. Al Horford, That's a segue there. That's a segue. That's what we call a segue in this business here. Wow. Let's talk about Al. Everybody's ripping him, and I've been
hard on him. And you?
Yeah,
you,
for sure.
Part of the,
I don't want 7-2. I don't want 8-5. This guy's making $113 million. I want an impact on the game. It doesn't have to be 20-10, Sherrod. Against Cleveland, he impacted the game. They got the win. I need Al to be a factor out there. Don't just be some glorified role player.
See, this is the thing about you and a lot of people that get this wrong about Al. You say, I want him to be an impact player, but I want his numbers to be this, this, and this. His numbers
I don't want 20-10, but I sure as hell don't want 7-2 either, or 8-5.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you take 17-7 and a loss, or would you take 7-2 and a win? Because
it's
I'm going to tell you right
win.
Now, Al Horford
but
is the type of player, his numbers are never.
How'd he do against Chicago, Sherrod? 7-2. How'd he do against Atlanta, his former team?
You mean, so, in other words, when they lose, he's the reason why?
He's part of their damn Skippy. If you make it $113 million, Sherrod, you're a four-time All-Star. You can't be a non-factor out there. You can't be.
So those nights when Paul Pierce, who was going to be a Hall of Famer, had bad nights, what, all of a sudden he became a bad player because he had one
but
or two
Paul
bad nights?
Paul Pierce had
Come on.
Kevin Garnett. Paul Pierce had
not
Ray
always
and how they do
when he had those pieces, he did well.
Exactly. You need pieces. Al is part of the piece. So much is on Isaiah Thomas. Somebody got to help him out. I'm not asking Al to get 17 a night, but first of all, rebounding is effort. You can't have two. You
rebounding
can't have,
is part
so you're
effort,
okay with Al Horford having two rebounds?
No.
Okay, but that's why you getting on my case.
Because
that's
you act
I'm
like
saying.
That's what he does every single night, and it's not.
It has been
his
recently.
Job,
it has
listen,
outside of the Cleveland game.
They paid him $113
million
to bring his butt here and help them win games. That is his job.
He
his
hasn't
job,
been doing that over the last
they got the
five.
Second best
what are
record
they,
3-2 the
over their last five?
How did this team fare before Al Horford stepped
on,
in the building?
Come on, man. Come on now. Against Chicago, how'd they do? Al Horford, non-factor. Against Atlanta, how'd they do?
This is the
non-factor.
Same thing Al Horford
Toronto,
has done with his entire career.
Non-factor.
I don't put up enough points. I don't do this. I don't do that. And yet my teams every year win, 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 win. Al Horford is here because he's a winner.
Dude, you,
don't
you sound like Al Horford's family members or something like that. Here's the thing with Al.
I want winners.
You don't, no.
And that's what Al brings to the table.
Please,
I
dude. I could get out there and give you
no,
two rebounds,
but we're not
going
to win with you because you don't pass like Al. You don't see the floor like Al. You don't set screens like Al.
No,
you don't make the hustle plays like Al.
No,
there are so many things.
It's called impact winning. Does Marcus Smart put up a lot of numbers? No.
No.
But Marcus Smart,
impact
winning. Al Horford, don't tell me Al Horford and Marcus Smart impact winning the same way. Because Marcus.
One guy's been in the league almost 10 years. The other guy's been in three. So
and let's keep it real. It was laughable. Some of us out here thought that Al Horford should be in the All-Star game. Once
now,
was it,
that
Al
conversation,
Horford
you and I never had that conversation. He
some
definitely
people
did not
actually thought, exactly.
All-star.
Come on.
To me, that's not even a conversation.
But
what
would you like to see from Al?
I would like to see Al give a little bit more rebound. I don't need him to get 10 boards, but maybe like a 5 or 6. I'm cool with like 5 or 6. Because the thing about Al, when he gets 5 or 6 rebounds, he usually gets 5, 6, 7 assists. He usually sets a number of screens that open up things for guys. And he's going to get you about 10 points. The thing that bothers me more than anything else about Al is all those damn missed layups. I don't care. I don't care about anything else other than the missed layups. That bothers me more than anything else about Al because that's basketball 101.
Yeah.
You got a shot at the rim, you finish. He misses more layups than I'm comfortable with. But other than that,
he's been struggling with his shot recently.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I wonder, is it getting into his head? What's going on? Is it just a rough patch? Like,
well,
I'm concerned about Al Horford.
I've talked with people who are way more familiar with Al Horford than we are.
Yeah.
And they've indicated to me that this is par for the course. Al is going to have stretches where he looks like an absolute non-factor. And yet then when you go back and you look at the film, you're like, oh, he set a good screen there. He got the, he said,
give me that,
he does he makes winning plays. Drips, I can't I don't know how
Sherrod,
I can get you to understand that the check that he gets cut has nothing to do with points, rebounds, and steals, and everything to do with W.
But it's about
that's
the expectations rise.
The expectations,
when
you should win.
When you're making four times as much as Isaiah Thomas and having, you know, half the impact as IT, something's wrong.
Now, pump your brakes for a second there. Because you act as if IT doesn't get beat on the defensive end. You act like he's scoring
right, 30 points.
And nothing is happening at the other end of the floor. You saw what happened when Kyrie Irving got motivated.
No, but can we say – when you sign a contract like that, and I'm more power to you, Al, because I'd sign the same thing. When you sign a contract like that, you're going to – expectations are going to come high, you know. Expectations are going to be higher.
And they should be.
No, this is a par for the course. Look at his numbers this year versus Atlanta. His numbers are down across the board.
Second best record in the East. You sucked before he got here.
All right, let's get up an insider, not a Celtics insider. My boy Sam Amick, an NBA insider, set to join the Celtics Talk podcast. Sam Amick of the USA Today, the NBA insider, joining us here on the Celtics Talk podcast. Sam, thanks for joining us, my friend.
No problem. Thanks for having me, boys.
Hey, we're going to get into a whole lot with you. Obviously, DeMarcus Cousins, we're going to talk about Kevin Durant and the Celtics. But let's start with the most timely thing, I guess. Kevin Durant out indefinitely with that sprained MCL. Does that shift at all the balance of power in the NBA, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I feel like we're still underplaying it a little bit because folks started waiting for that release that was going to say he was out for the year. So I understand that, you know, Warriors fans and folks who follow Golden State felt like they dodged a bullet. But I just don't necessarily see it that way. For one, he's going to get reevaluated in 4 weeks, which is a pretty key distinction between returning. I mean, there's no guarantee that that's when he comes back. You know, there's a guy, I don't know if you guys follow him, Jeff Stotts does a great job following injuries. He's on Twitter, and he's got a database that breaks down, you know, guys with these kinds of injuries. And the average time missed for the grade 2 MCL sprain was 21 games. And so, to me, I think to your question, Sherrod, and does it shift the balance of power, you're talking about him coming back late in the regular season, maybe in the first round. And we saw last year, when Steph Curry got hurt with his knee injury, that even when he was back, he wasn't necessarily all the way back. And that's enough sometimes for an elite team, I think, to get derailed. And so, I mean, if you're San Antonio, if you're Houston and some of these other teams, I think you got to try to push a little harder and try to make the most of this opportunity here.
Sam, if let's say when he gets reevaluated and they decide that, well, you know, maybe he needs to miss a little more time. At what point does his absence become something to where Golden State will struggle? Because I think they can get past the first round with no problem, with or without Durant. Second round, it might get a little sticky if he's not ready.
No doubt. And that's where it's like it's deja vu all over again from last year. I felt like I learned a lot last year covering closely how they handled Steph Curry and his injury. And it was kind of a reminder that the playoffs is just a different ball of wax. And, you know, the level of competition is so much higher that, you know, any vulnerability is compounded. And so to your point, for one, they're going to miss him on defense, which is one thing everybody's overlooking, I think, because with no Andrew Bogut, with no, to a lesser degree, no Festus Ezeli, Durant was the rim protector. They had the number 2 defense in the NBA to this point on defensive rating. And with Draymond Green, he was one of the leaders on the defensive side. I think they're going to give up a lot of points now. I mean, they still have plenty of firepower to score the ball. And then, like you said, once he gets back, it's kind of that wobbly time in the transition period where they try to work him back in. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm in LA right now. And so we were having some fun on Press Row last night with our friend Ben Golliver at SI and Kevin Ding at Bleacher Report. And full disclosure, I was just being sarcastic. But I was telling them, like, guys, what if the Spurs overtake the Warriors? They get the number 1 seed. The Warriors go to number 2. They see OKC in the first round. And then what if Durant's not back? What if you had a Warriors-OKC first-round series with no Kevin Durant and Russ sees, you know, blood in the water? And he just tries to go, you know, pull off the inevitable or the impossible and knock those boys out. I mean, I'm kind of kidding, but it kind of shows that.
That's not a stretch.
I know.
That's really not that big
and
a stretch.
You know, I mean, if he's not back, you know, well, okay, so the stretch is where I kept being a smart aleck and I said, all right, so the Warriors get knocked out and then Durant opts out and re-signs back in OKC.
Oh, now you're talking crazy.
But I mean, we'll see. I think it's a red flag. You know what I mean? They got a major challenge ahead now.
Yeah, but, you know, the Warriors will say, well, we won a championship without Kevin Durant. We won 73 games last season without Kevin Durant. But obviously he's a big part of what they're doing this year, but if you take him off, they're not the same team as they were the last couple of years, right?
No, absolutely, Kyle. I mean, the different part of this is, in a vacuum, that logic makes sense, but they have a very different roster construction because of Kevin Durant. You know, they lost a lot of depth. Mo Spates, you know, another big who, you know, is certainly not a defensive force, but part of their depth was lost. The strength and numbers motto they had last couple of years wasn't necessarily there early this season because they had to pay a price for creating enough room to get Durant. So the margin for error is, I think, more thin than people give it credit for because of the way this roster is built. I mean, nobody – I kind of wrote this yesterday. You know, nobody's going to feel bad for them. You got a superstar roster. And so the common thought is going to be, all right, get over it. You lost one star. You're going to be just fine, you know, and then you're still going to be killing everybody down the line. But, I think it does matter.
And speaking of things that do matter, Cleveland has certainly not stood pat, even though they've been the best team in the East, you know, all season, adding, you know, Deron Williams, adding soon to be Bogut to the mix. How do those additions change your perspective of the Cavs? I mean, are they more equipped in your mind to repeat as champions? Or are they about the same? How do you see the additions that they've made?
I like it a lot. I mean, I like Deron in particular, you know, not the Deron of old, but still was producing in Dallas and, you know, pretty incredibly motivated right now. You would have to imagine with this kind of opportunity at this point in his career, a guy who's never won a title. I think, you know, he's going to try to seize the moment. The Bogut thing, I think, could be really good. I hadn't watched Bogut closely enough, nor had he played enough, to really get a sense of what kind of shape he's in, what kind of, you know, if it's the Bogut of old, because I've always been a huge advocate of his game. I mean, it was only about 2 years ago where I remember, and now this, you know, this kind of seems insane and kind of sacrilege, but part of the reason I didn't vote for Draymond Green 2 years ago for Defensive Player of the Year, and I voted for Kawhi Leonard, was because Andrew Bogut's defensive value was so great that I felt like, you know, it was just they kind of split votes between the two of them. I mean, yep. His defensive presence was that good. And you're only talking about 2 years ago. Not only that, more recently, I mean, I was in Rio, watching Andrew in the Olympics, and seeing Sherrod, you remember, like where he was good.
He was really good.
And, yeah, and so if he's that guy, it's going to be a big-time thing. Their depth was a problem. You know, I mentioned earlier, no one's going to feel bad for the Warriors losing a guy. I mean, the Cavs lose J.R. Smith. They lose Kevin Love. They've had their own rocky road to get through. So I think the depth is going to be really big for them.
Yeah, staying on the Cavs, January was sort of a rocky month for them. They just lost to the Celtics on Wednesday night. Can anybody really challenge them in the East, do you think?
I mean, the Boston game was a kind of a flagpole moment, I think. And I only saw the end of it. And, I mean, some spectacular highlights in that game. I'm sure it was fun to cover. Because that was the question going in was just, you know, is Boston close enough? Have they bridged that gap? Did they blow their chance by not doing anything at the deadline? Toronto obviously fading in a major way with Kyle's injury. And Washington playing really good ball. And the Wizards, the last time they played Cleveland, you know, they didn't pull it out, but they sent a message, I thought. And so I think it's going to be a competitive Eastern Conference. And it's the same rationale for me with the Cavs and their vulnerability as it is with the Warriors. I think the injuries are significant, even though LeBron is incredible, and even though he's kind of having a – not kind of, I mean, he's having an MVP-caliber year. He's just not getting a lot of shine for it. As great as LeBron is, I think all the different setbacks they've had, you know, just increase the odds for everybody else.
Yeah, LeBron, I mean, he's – assist-wise, I think he's having like a career season passing the ball, which is crazy considering that's been one of his strengths throughout his entire career. Yeah. But
right.
you touched on the Celtics. Now, I didn't make any moves at the trade deadline, but obviously they're going to be one of the teams in position to do some pretty big things this summer as far as cap space, things like that. Do you anticipate them making a major splash this summer?
I feel like they will. I feel like, and Sherrod, you and I talked about this a little bit recently, and then I ended up writing about Isaiah Thomas's contract situation and the idea that, you know, conceivably, yes, they could renegotiate and extend his deal this year and eat up their cap space that way. But I just don't think that's strategically where they're at, nor do I think if, you know, Isaiah, from the sound of it, is much more interested in going ahead and waiting until two summers from now, where the landscape will open up. And I think there's kind of a shared incentive there because, you know, he wants the team to get better and they want to take that next step. Plus, that elephant in the room of, I mean, I can't remember a team, you know, having a pick like they potentially have with that Brooklyn pick in the draft, where it's not that they don't want it. I mean, it's a fantastic asset, but, you know, where if they ultimately use that pick, you know, typically there's not an ounce of downside to having that kind of an asset. But this is a unique situation where if they don't use the cap space and if, you know, and if you're bringing in Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz or Josh Jackson or one of these guys, then you're kind of on two building paths. You know, are you doing the rebuilding thing, or are you just, you know, anteing up to win a title? So for all those reasons, I feel like they'll find a way to use that space. I don't know if it's going to be Gordon Hayward or who it's going to be, but you know, they've been real patient, trying to buy their time and wait for that moment to take that next step.
Yeah, do you think, because Danny was sort of non-existent, not non-existent, but they stood pat at the trade deadline, could that come back to bite them? Or were you one of the ones out there thinking, man, the Celtics need rebounding, they could use another scorer, they should go for it now, maybe Cleveland is ripe for the picking? Could not doing anything come back to bite Danny this season?
Yeah, for sure, because you have these moments in time that – The tricky thing about pro sports is that I think sometimes, you know, I mean, we kind of joke with just the saying, just life comes at you fast. So, you know, before we know it, it could be next season. And maybe we are already looking back at this moment in time in February 2017 and saying that that was the time to kind of grab the bull by the horns. You know, maybe something changes to where the Celtics landscape is not as advantageous even a year from now for whatever reason. I thought it's always tough to judge when you're not in the room, and I can't sit here in good time, you know, conscience, and tell you exactly what Danny had available to him on trade deadline week. But the idea of pushing hard to get a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, and the fact that those guys seems more gettable than they had been for quite some time, you know, I think the timing would have been great to do something. But was it going to cost you, you know, a couple of your core guys? You know, were you going to have to lose a Jay Crowder or something like that? I don't know. In addition to that pick that I mentioned earlier, but you know, we'll see. I think that they're kind of, it's a high wire act right now, and you know, and they haven't fallen yet, and we'll see if they do. But the patience is what strikes me about Danny. I did this thing recently, a podcast with Kevin McHale, and he said something I thought was pretty insightful as a guy who obviously knows Danny extremely well. He said, you know, what's funny about Danny, he said, man, as a player, he says, and as a person, he is the most impatient person you'll ever come across. He's like, the guy can't wait for anyone. And then as an executive, I mean, he's got this kind of Zen-like quality where he just holds his cards close to the vest and waits for the move.
Yes, that is Danny that we love. Yeah. you were talking earlier about just kind of basically what we're talking about is just the cost of doing business. And when you look at Sacramento Kings, DeMarcus Cousins, that I guess you can call it a haul, a very small one that they got for DeMarcus. Two part question. One, are you surprised that things have not worked out better initially for DeMarcus and the Pelicans? And two, the assets that they got in return for him, are you surprised that they weren't greater than they turned out to be?
Yeah, no question. I mean, I've got, you know, since the deal went down, I've got a good understanding of why that happened. But, I mean, listen, I've also talked, you know, to folks around the league who and this is not, you know, sometimes you got folks who just dish dirt to dish dirt. And the sense, this is not that. It's just critical analysis of Vlade Divac and his group and how they handled the situation. So there are varying opinions about, you know, if you were going to move a guy of that magnitude, you know, there's some folks who think they should have had more of a kind of a league-wide shopping spree where you just go ahead and make it known, field the offers, and have a transparent approach to it, and maybe the deal would have been better. I think the Kings people would say that that would have been a recipe for disaster with DeMarcus and untenable in Sacramento because of what his reaction might have been. So, you know, but any way you slice it, they just didn't get a lot at all. And not only that, and it, you know, since we were kicking around scenarios earlier that are unlikely but possible, my goodness, like New Orleans is off to a bad start with DeMarcus, like you mentioned. They're 1-3. They won without him because he was suspended because of that technical foul. If they keep losing, which they probably won't, but, I mean, man, the Kings allowed that first-rounder to be top-three protected, and the Pelicans are only, I think, three games or three-and-a-half games away from bottom three in the league. So that would be the nuclear worst-case scenario for the Kings. They do this deal, and they somehow lose that first-round pick.
Sacramento being Sacramento there, the Kings being the
Kings.
I mean,
that's where folks were like, how in the world, if you're only getting Langston Galloway, Buddy Hield, Tyreke Evans, how are you allowing any protections whatsoever on that pick? Right. So I think that's another fair criticism. But, I mean, it's just – it's such a unique landscape. There was a lot of pressure applied by DeMarcus's agency on other teams, a lot of scare tactics. You know, they called the Pelicans, told them they were making a mistake for trying to trade for DeMarcus, told them he wasn't going to resign. And then next thing you know, they're taking the second first rounder off the table and turning that into a second rounder. And so the Kings, you can say that to a degree they panicked because they just said, man, every offer we're getting, which is not many, is getting worse by the day. So they pulled the trigger. You know, so they're in a tough spot. The Pelicans, I mean, we'll see. It's four games. I'm trying to think who they played, but, you know, the one game I watched against Oklahoma City, I almost felt bad for New Orleans because DeMarcus and Anthony were just dynamic. And DeMarcus had foul trouble, but he still had monster numbers in foul trouble. And those two, you know, big superstars were great, but Westbrook was just better. And the Thunder ended up winning that game. So they might get there in time over, you know, the course of the season. But right now, I mean, the idea of them sneaking into the playoffs looks pretty unlikely.
All right, our guy Sam Amick of USA Today joining the Celtics Talk podcast. Sam, thanks for all your insight. Thanks for stopping by, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Great stuff from Sam there, talking about Cousins, KD, the Celtics, Cleveland. Good guy to have on the Celtics Talk podcast.
We hit a lot of the hot button topics out there with Sam. That was good to hear. Good to hear.
Hey, back to the Celtics real quick. My guy, Jaylen Brown. I mean, I did give him the nickname the Poet, even though he shot that down.
It's
but
horrible.
I was on top of him since exhibition season, preseason games. And now, Sherrod, he's a key member of this team. So much, though, that some are talking about maybe Rookie of the Year candidate. What do you think about that?
Well, I think he needs to be in the conversation. He's doing something that no other rookie is doing, and that is contributing in a positive way to a team that has deep playoff aspirations and have positioned themselves to where they're one of the top teams in the NBA. That in itself is going to get him consideration because you can't go by his numbers. His numbers are not going to compare with some of the other rookies out there because, frankly, those guys play on crappy teams and they get lots of minutes playing on crappy teams. He's had to earn his minutes on a very, very good Celtics team.
Yeah, my only concern is obviously a late start to it. You know, the Avery Bradley injury came on and Jaylen has, you know, took that spot and ran with it. And he's forcing Brad Stevens to play him some minutes. And the key for him is he has to continue this. If he continues this trend, you know, averaging, you know, 10 points a game over the final 6 weeks of the season, he's going to be in that conversation.
You look at that bench, and really they don't have a guy that they can turn to and get points. I mean, Jaylen's one of the few guys who's shown the ability to score, and because of his athleticism and his ability to get out in transition. And he looks to be so much better in a lot of areas that I thought were a little, you know, kind of skeptical or kind of shady at first. Yeah. I mean, his three-point shooting, he's a better three-point shooter than I think a lot of people thought he could be at this point. And so he's doing what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make it hard as hell on your coach to keep you on the bench.
Yeah.
Much respect to him for that.
Yeah, and the thing is, you could tell he's worked on it. I mean, the three-point shot, like you said, looks a whole lot better. And the thing I'm most impressed with is his confidence. You know, you talk about the fourth quarter, he's not afraid of the moment. You know, when he gets the ball, it's not, all right, I got the ball, now let me just give it to somebody else. Right. He's trying to make plays out there, Sherrod, and I've been impressed by that.
And you know what I'm starting to see also is what happens around him when he's trying to make plays. Mm-hmm. You don't see those situations where the rookie takes a shot and the vets start cringing like, damn, Rook, what
right,
you doing?
Right.
You don't see that. It's like when he takes a shot or when he makes a play, it's almost to the point where they expect him to try and do that. That they know that he recognizes opportunities when it's there for him to do certain things, and he's not shy or the least bit hesitant about doing that.
Yeah, and when you talk about Rookie of the Year, I think it'll probably go to Brogdon of Milwaukee or even Saric of Philly. Definitely not Embiid now.
No, Embiid, your boy Embiid is done. He's trusting the process. All about the process in Philly. I think right now it'll probably go to Brogdon just because in Milwaukee he's been so consistent.
Right, right.
I believe he would be the first second-round pick to win the award.
Yeah.
Which is impressive. But he's been really just a rock-solid player. But Jalen has positioned himself to where he's going to be a top-four, top-five finisher
for
the award, which is really – he'll be the only guy in a winning situation to be – thought of that highly.
Is this a weak rookie class?
It's a weak rookie class in terms of impact players
so far. Okay.
Yeah. Because think about it. Ben Simmons, we have no idea how good he's going to be. Ingram in that hot mess out in L.A., we don't really know about that. And then you've got Jalen, who is just, frankly, about as atypical a lottery pick as you can find.
Right.
Top three pick on a team that's, going to finish second or third, possibly, in the conference. That does not happen a lot.
Yeah, so we'll have to see – you get a vote for that or no?
I'll find out a little bit later on.
I'm not going to put you on the spot,
I'll tell you
big
what,
fella.
Though, for rookie of the year, it wasn't going to be Embiid.
Oh, no.
I mean, this was even before he got hurt. That third-year rookie thing, no.
No, what, dude.
We've had this conversation. I'm not telling
you. Are
you
pissed because he chose Kansas over Syracuse?
I'm not telling you
some
anything.
Backstory?
I'm not telling you anything I have not told you off camera. That third year rookie, that whole scenario is just.
But Sherrod, you do not get to determine who's eligible for Rookie of the Year or not. Is he eligible for Rookie of the Year? Does the league say so?
So just because it's the letter of law, that means it's right?
Damn Skippy.
Okay.
Look at you trying to change.
Those words.
You better call your
point,
boy Tim Frank and Adam Silver and get them to change that.
Those words are going to come back and bite you, my friend. I'm just letting you know that right now. I'm going to remember those words.
Hey, if Embiid went to Syracuse, you'd have him on the ballot. You'd have him number one.
No, if he went to Syracuse, he would not be in the Rookie of the Year conversation.
That's true, because y'all don't have many of those.
Exactly. Although Carter Williams –
oh, exactly. We saw what happened to him.
One and done.
Literally one and done, basically.
He got the trophy, and that was it. We're done. It's
all
a wrap.
Right, man. Let's wrap this thing up. Thanks again to Sam Amick of USA Today stopping by, giving us the insight on the Celtics, the Cavs, Warriors, everything going on in the NBA. We got a big week coming up here on CSN beginning Monday. You can watch The Whole Truth. Scal's conversation with Paul Pierce. They sit down. We got a half-hour special beginning Monday at 9 p.m., taking you up to Celtics pregame live presented by Ace Ticket at 9:30 as the Celtics take on the Clippers and Paul Pierce for the final time of his illustrious career. Also, that day, check out the uncut interview on our Celtics Talk podcast feed, Scal and Pierce reminiscing about some great times in Celtics green. You got to make sure you're going to check that out. I know you're going to listen to that, right, Sherrod?
I will definitely listen to that, and you will listen to that, and you will be in the building.
You will be in the building in La La Land. Big city of dreams, dude. Oh,
just
man.
Just off of bail money. I'm just giving you that right now.
Dude, I'm going to be in bed by 10, having milk and cookies, just chilling, watching Murder, She Wrote, bro.
Why you got to bring Jessica Lange into this, man?
All right, let's get out of here. That'll do it for this edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper. Make sure you tune in to CSNNE.com. You can also listen to the podcast on Audioboom, iTunes, Stitcher, all the podcasting apps, and leave a review out there because we want to hear from you guys. Peace out on this week's edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast.
We out!